This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 502, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Give me the Star Wars, don't let them end. Star Wars, if they should Star Wars, please let me.
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 502, The Aftermath. My name is Ron Richards, and as always, I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And hello, Connor. And sitting in this week for an absent traveling Josh Flanagan is our good friend, comicbook.com's Jim Viscardi.
Hello. This is my first Pick of the Week with Ron. I can't believe it's finally happened.
It's shocking. It finally happened. And it nearly didn't happen, Jim. So I am traveling as well, but unlike Josh, I'm putting in the work. I'm putting in the time.
You have dedication.
I have dedication. Yes, exactly. I'm in a hotel room, so bear with me if my audio doesn't sound good. But yeah.
We apologize.
All right. Well, Jim, it's good to be podcasting with you finally. All right, so we are from the website ifanboy.com, and we like comics. And every week we read a whole stack of comics, and one of us deems the book that we thought was the one that we enjoyed the most and make it the pick of the week. And we'll come here and talk about that book, other books, as well as other stuff, maybe some of your emails. Although after last week's three-hour extravaganza, I never want to see another iFanboy's email again. No, I'm just kidding. I love you all, the iFanboys. I ran into I got recognized in a Target in Chicago by a member of the iFanbase. This guy, Matt, said, "Hey, are you Ron? I really enjoyed episode 501.
Did he want to know why you were working there?
No, he said – well, he later tweeted at me and said that I was taller.
That's the number one thing we get from people we meet in real life is that we're always taller than people think we are. Remember that one guy, Ron, you probably don't, who was stunned into silence when he ran into the three of us at Comic-Con?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, but Connor, Connor, you're a giant, so it's...
Well, it averages out. Ron and I are tall, and Josh is a midget, and so...
the funny thing is that I've never considered myself tall. Like, I feel like I'm average. Like, I'm 6 foot tall. I mean, like, that. I feel like that's just normal. Like, you know, 5'10 to 6 foot is, like, the normal range. I don't know, but Jim, you're a shorty. I don't know, but... I always find it very, very strange the people react and like, what do they think? We're like 5'5"? Like, what, like we're just like basement mouth breathers who aren't tall? Like, I don't understand. It's very bizarre.
Anyway, it's the opposite of the Hollywood thing, right? Where you see people on the screen and you think they're tall and then you meet them and they're 5'5".
And they're tiny. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, okay, well, enough about our height. So a quick word of warning. We're going to talk about what happened in the books this week. So there will be spoilers. So if you are spoiler scared, press pause and then come back after you've read your books. Connor had the pick of the week, and I picked Connor's pick a mile away. As soon as I saw the credits on the cover, I knew this would be the pick of the week.
Pick of the week is Batman number 44. It's the clear pick for this week in comics, written by Scott Snyder and Brian Azzarello, with art by Scott Snyder's Witches and Detective Comics compatriot Jock. And this was a classic one-shot story that is also still a little bit tied into what's been happening in the main story. But this
this comic felt like a throwback in the best possible way, in which we just get a single story of Bruce Wayne, Batman, right after Zero Year. So right after, so he's still very early in his career, investigating a dead teenage boy found in a field, and it's just a crime story. It's just him investigating a murder, and there's a little bit of the backstory. We run into Mr. Bloom, who's the current villain in the current arc. We see a little bit of his early days just on one page, and then, but for most part, it's just Batman trying to figure out why there's a dead teenage boy in a field that no one can figure out how he got there. And I thought this was a wonderful little one shot, and Jock, for my money, can come hang out in Gotham City anytime he wants.
Well, I think you nailed it when you said this felt like old times, because reading this, I was like, wow, this feels like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's funny. It's funny how that does that say more about the state of DC now?
Yes, says something about it. There's a lot of things going on here. I mean, there's been some criticism from some people, because there's spoiler warning. So the kid who was dead was is he black or Latina? It's hard to tell with the art, but
I don't see color, Connor.
Yeah, I know. I know you're colorblind, Ron. and so it turns out he was at one point shot by a cop. So there's a little bit of current events happening in this issue, but really it's not about him being killed by the police. It's about how basically every facet of society fails this kid, up to and including Batman and Bruce Wayne himself. So I liked the fact that it wasn't just a parable to the current events. It was also a examination of how people fall through society's cracks in every way. And I thought it was great. I thought it was really emotionally affecting. It looked beautiful, and
could you pick up on the difference? So Snyder did the story, and then it looks like Azzarello came in and did. Did you pick up on the difference in writing?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was scripted by Azzarello, clearly. Right.
It just had that feeling where, you know, I want to use the cliche of, you know, being able to go home again and all that jazz, but it's just like it felt to me like even the early Scott Snyder type stories when he was doing Detective with Jock, it just was like that warm security blanket that really made it feel like that much more of a memorable moment. Like this is, it felt like a one issue event as opposed to just like a one issue, you know, break issue or whatever. And it just came together so perfectly and reminded me why I really like Batman as a character, specifically, you know, especially under someone like Scott Snyder and Azzarello.
And the thing is, like, I'm enjoying the current story, but, like, I don't want to read Gordon as Batman. I don't want to read one-handed, hook-handed Alfred. I want this. This is what I want.
Not my Batman.
Hashtag not my Alfred.
not my Alfred.
this is what I want. I want Commissioner Gordon and a trench coat and Batman investigating crimes and Alfred having two hands so he can serve his tea. And this is what I want. And this is what I got this month, so this has made me extremely happy.
Not only that, but you got Jock, which is, like you
said, it's gorgeous.
It's just not fair. It's just not even fair how good he is.
There was one page very early on where I just wanted to walk around my office and show everybody, but then they would have known I was reading comics at my desk, so they didn't do that.
But, don't let them know.
there's just a shot of Batman standing over the body. It's a low angle shot, and it's just a gorgeous looking shot of Batman. I mean, he draws him so well, and I love his stuff on witches, and it's all great, but that run on Detective was so epic, and it's really just nice to see him come back one more time.
My only nitpicky bit of criticism for the issue is I'm not the biggest fan of like the muddy color palette. I like
Who colored this? Did Hollingsworth color?
Lee Lowrich.
Oh, Lee colored it. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, it was top notch.
So Connor, if the Batman world, if like the next issue was this that Bruce in the suit, Alfred with two hands, like, and just forgetting everything that happened, would you even care?
I'm always in favor of just pulling the fuck it, we're gonna ignore everything route of storytelling. I mean, the problem comics always runs into is when everything tries to get explained, and because you can't explain it all. And my thing was always like, Hawkman's all screwed up. Let's just ignore everything and tell new Hawkman stories and forget it. And so I'd be totally fine if, you know, Alfred steps out of the shower and he's got two hands.
Is Hawkman screwed up?
I assume so. I don't know.
I'll tell you what's screwed up. That costume for the TV show.
Come a long way since Smallville. So,
well, yeah,
could be a lot worse.
Jim's our resident TV stills expert.
So I would be fine with that if they just said, you know what, you know, we're going to forget Damien ever existed. We're going to forget Alfred's got one hand. We're going to just forget everything that happened and just tell new Batman stories. I would be 100% fine with it. Now, there'd be a lot of people who would have coronaries on Wednesday at comic store, but I would not be one of them. So I'd be fine.
I kind of wish they would do that.
Not, you know, it's an old school style. I mean, remember, I wrote about this a long time ago on the website. When Mark Waid took over Captain America, he had, you know, he had died. He had had the metal suit. He had all these things that happened to him. And what did they do? They just, Red Skull pulled a bunch of levers on a big machine, and he out came Cap like he always was. And they just, that's all they did. He just moved on. They just, at some point, you just got to move on. And
just move on. It's good advice.
From your bad decisions. So,
hey, comics industry, just move on.
Just move on.
So, that's our new slogan. That's our new slogan. I'm going to make a t-shirt that says, comics industry, just move on.
So this was for me the clear pick. I had the most fun reading. This is also an oversized issue. I know people were complaining also about the price, but it was like 10 more pages or something like that than you normally get.
How much was it?
$4.99.
Of course it was.
It's a standard Marvel book.
Yeah, right. Standard Marvel. But any opportunity for DC to jack up the price on Batman, they'll do it. They'll take it.
Well, what else do they got going?
Not a whole lot, that's for sure.
They got to cover some bills. So Batman 44, this is a great one-shot story. You can read it on your own. You can read it as part of the overall story as sort of a flashback to Mr. Bloom, which is, you know, not integral to this particular story so much, but it's there anyway, so you know where he came from. Or you can just enjoy it as a great comic, which it is. So there you go. I also really enjoyed, and Ron, I don't believe we had a chance to talk about this book with you yet, Starve, number 4 from Image, Brian Wood. How do you say that name?
I'm not going to work here anymore.
Danny Zajac.
And
Dave Stewart, the story about the post-apocalyptic sort of, well, not post-apocalyptic, but post-economic apocalyptic cooking show, Starve. And I love how bonkers this book is.
Yeah.
It's absolutely bonkers, and it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
I read the first issue in a lark. Now, when a new issue comes out, I get really excited that it's here, and I read it right away.
Yeah.
This is bonkers.
I mean, it's funny because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I mean, you could, you know, so it's Brian Wood's take on the celebrity chef world, and it's very clear. You could easily read this and see where the Bourdain influence comes from.
Oh, 100%,
And you know, things like that, and just like kind of the references to, you know, the cooking in the 70s and 80s and what it was like but back in the day and all this sort of stuff. But yeah, but there's a level of insanity to this, which is, you know, and like what's funny is that I find myself like Wood is balancing enough of so the main chef guy is Chef Cruikshank or whatever it is, Gavin Cruikshank. You know, he's balancing this, you know, reality television show competition that he's forced to compete in with the drama of his personal life and his estranged wife and his child and all that stuff. And I find myself, it's like giving us just enough of a taste, huh? Pun unintended, just enough of a taste of either story to leave me wanting more on both sides.
Well, there's a little bit of Susan of DMZ in here. There's a little bit of Anthony Bourdain. There's a lot of different influences going on here. I mean, this is a world in which the have and have nots have come even further apart to the point where everyone who's not an elite is just living in poverty, and the elites are entertained by these crazy TV shows. And so there's that going on, which is very DMZ-esque, and then there's the examination of he's either a foodie or he's got a foodie advisor for this book, because you get very much into the food as well, which I like quite a bit. But in this issue, so in episode 4 of Starve, they've got to go cook in different restaurants all across the city, which is hard enough, but they actually have to invade the restaurant, fight the chefs that are in there, hold the restaurant, and then cook their meal while people are trying to attack them, which was just bonkers. I mean, it's been kind of not that bonkers up to this point. This is where it got kind of like crazy.
I haven't been reading this, but you have just sold me on it. So now,
go back and read. It's only 4 issues. Go back and read it.
I am going back and reading it because this sounds like a book right up my alley.
Well, the first issue started, and you felt like it was just going to be a spy story, the way the character was introduced, but it was all about a celebrity chef, and then there's been a lot of drama with his daughter and his wife up till now, but now. And he said to cook strange meals, but they've always been sort of standard cooking stuff. Now it's like go out and you got to hold 24 restaurants in 24 hours or something like that, and
yeah,
it's crazy. It's fun.
Yeah, no, like it ends on the cliffhanger of the, like their first challenge was they had, you know, 45 minutes to, you know, go to a cafe and defeat, you know, the kitchen staff and then make an appetizer, and then the next challenge is they've got 7 hours to go to a restaurant and defeat the kitchen staff and then do a table service for 30 people.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my god, like it's balancing the rigors of working in a restaurant kitchen, but with this idea of doom and violence. And it's honestly, this is almost like what I wish Bourdain had done with the Get Jiro graphic novel, you know, and instead he went in a different direction and it was a little more, you know, sensational and less realistic or whatever. But this is, you know, this has got a very dark color palette. It's very, very dark tone. It's a lot of night scenes and shadows and things like that. But I find myself, I want to see more food. Like it's,
well, there's a lot of here for a food lover to love. I mean, get into the food of it. And there was the last issue, I think, was the one with the pig where they went on to cook how you cut up and cook the pig. So there's a lot going on here to love.
There's a little recipe card that shows what they're making and like how to do it. And like, yeah, it's good. Yeah, Jim, you should check it out. It's a lot of fun.
Nice.
I like it.
So now, Ron, I'm really excited that you're here because Phonogram, the Material Girl number 2 is out. You missed the episode with the first one.
The Immaterial Girl.
I'm sorry, the Immaterial Girl.
Yeah.
You missed the first time, so
I was out when the first issue came back, and let me just say, Phonogram's back, and it's just so, so good.
Jim, are you reading this?
I am, in the same way that I read it the first time around, where I have a good grasp of what I think is going on, but I'm glad I was able to do this episode because I'm sure I need Ron to explain it a bit for me.
Well, I mean, it's funny because this week also had the release of Wicked and Divine number 14, which is, it's Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey.
Scheduling.
Yeah, it's a nice little scheduling snafu where you get a double whammy of Gillen and McKelvey. And it's funny because I was talking to a friend of mine about them who's a big fan of Gillen and McKelvey, and he described the difference between Phonogram and Wicked and Divine. Like, Phonogram made him fall in love with the band, and then Wicked and Divine is like the band's mainstream record.
Interesting.
And Phonogram Immaterial Girl is them like coming back and going back to their roots and doing like their original sound, like that sort of thing, which is kind of funny.
Their next project is their Vegas show.
Yeah, or no, probably a greatest hits record will happen before that.
All right.
Yeah. But Phonogram Immaterial Girl, I'm loving it. You know, really all you need to, like, you don't need to, I mean, it ties into the greater Phonogram lexicon, like into the greater Phonogram, you know, kind of universe. But all you really need to know is that this main girl, Emily Astor, the girl with the dark hair, she sold half of her soul for power, basically. And then what has happened is that her dark side has been trapped. And now her dark side made a play and emerged into our reality. And while her good side is now trapped in the world of music videos, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, I followed this one much better than I did the first one.
Yeah,
I felt a little bit hard, but this I got it here.
Yeah,
especially for someone like me or Ron, who's a little bit older and grew up on all these music videos that she's coursing her way through. Not that younger people wouldn't know what they are, but I mean, like, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, Take on Me by A-ha and Material Girl by Madonna are two classic videos. I would really feel really sad if Jim, you're a
Thriller, Thriller as well.
Yeah,
Did those debut on Vimeo, or I don't know.
Oh, jeez. I'd be really bad if kids these days don't know about the Material Girl video, because that's a great video. But nice little callback to Phonogram Singles Club, and there's a one page when Emily's dark side puts on music and is, you know, kind of getting in her dark clothes. That was a lot of throwback to the scene in Phonogram Singles Club issue 1 when Penny is getting ready to go out that night.
Yeah.
You know, some similar panels and things like that in there. No, I love it. I think this is great. This is Gillen McKelvey doing what they do best, and I almost say I like this better than Wicked and Divine because it's, you know, of course it's characters I know and it ties into the music side of things, but I just feel like you feel the love with this book.
So is the king behind the screen Michael Jackson? Are they saying that? I mean, he is the personification of Michael Jackson in the Thriller video. We just can't see him because he's staticked out, but
right.
Are they saying he's the, like, the devil? Is that their?
I don't know if he's the devil, but he's definitely, yeah. I mean, it's taking that form at least. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. I love the A-ha guy. Oh god, the A-ha sequences were the best. They're so good. But I think the highlight of this is that at one point we see David Cole, who is the protagonist from the first Funnygram series, and somebody takes a picture of him. And he, the way, if you look at the panel of him posing for the picture,
how Kieran
it's literally Kieran Gillen. It's literally like Jamie Drew. Like, that's exactly how Kieran poses for photos.
But I mean, this is also the issue where I really saw the parallel between the two of them. And I was like, yes. Oh, I wonder if he was autobiographical the whole time.
Probably. It's hard not to be, especially with Kieran's interest in music and his thoughts about the power of music and things like that. But yeah, no, this is great. I love it. And then on the other side of the fence, Wicked and Divine number 14 came out this week, and I thought it was worth mentioning because, you know, you got a schedule and, you know, how were they able to put out two issues in 1 week? Wicked and Divine number 14 is a complete remix issue.
Right.
Where all of the art is from previous issues of Wicked and Divine.
Well, here's your greatest hits album.
Exactly.
There it is. Vegas.
I thought it was an interesting little experiment, you know, to see if you could make a complete issue out of, you know, already done artwork and, like, either reposition it or add color filters or do, you know, Matt Wilson worked overtime on this issue. You know, it's clear, like, he was the difference maker on it.
I love about this entire creative team is that you can always count on them every couple of issues or so to really try and push comics to sort of its limit as from a reading experience, from a story experience. Like, there is a clear reason why these guys are so great at what they do, and this issue I feel like is a picture perfect reason.
Yeah. And the thing is that, like, especially with Funnygram making its kind of return, you know, go back to that first Funnygram series and look how far they've come.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's the other thing too. Like, as far as like mastering craft, and like we basically over the past 10 years have been able to watch these guys become better and better creators through the lens of these characters and these kind of stories. And I can't, you know, they're, you know, I'll continue to be huge fans of them and will be for their whole career. I mean, I just love it. It's great.
Are you enjoying this series as much as?
I'm enjoying it. I mean, I really like this issue. I thought this issue of Wicked Divine, you know, kind of, you know, answered a bunch of questions and shed light on a bunch of stuff. And you saw who killed the judge in Lucifer's trial and all this sort of stuff. I love the fact that, you know, that the Tron guy is basically Jamie living out his obsession with the look of Tron. you know, I mean, it's just all in all, I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's a different type of thing. I mean, it's definitely, I mean, they're all both steeped in the world of pop and culture and things like that. But with Funnygram more on the music side and you know, Wicked Divine more on the deity, you know, kind of God side, you know, like religious side. I'm not as interested in the religious stuff, but, you know, it's just beautiful to look at. And it's just, I feel like, you know, like I'm with it, you know, and I've heard criticisms that it plays a little too close to the Tumblr crowd and things like that, but I don't care. I mean, it's fine. They you know, whatever, they can do whatever wrong.
Play to your audience.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, but I just love that Funnygram is back, and I can't wait to get I want them to put them all into one big volume and just have the one big volume of Funnygram. That'll be great.
I was surprised to see this next book on the list for reasons we'll get into in the email section.
Okay. So what's the full title, by the way?
I don't know.
Star Wars Journey to the Force Awakens, Shattered Empire number 1.
Oh, boy.
We got a new one.
We got a new contender.
So wait, what is so Star Wars Journey to the Force Awakens. So Star Wars as a header.
Yeah.
Right. Journey to the Force Awakens : Shattered Empire number 1. Right.
Yep.
So Connor, I assume you didn't read this as your
absolutely not.
Okay, so Jim, you had to read this
one. I did. We should. I don't want to put another spoiler buffer here, because if you don't want to know any connection to The Force Awakens, fast forward a minute.
No.
But here's the thing is that, like, Connor and I are in a strict media blackout when it comes to The Force Awakens, because I know personally I just want to be surprised when I go see it and all that sort of stuff.
But
I read the book, yeah, because this has nothing to do with The Force Awakens.
But it does.
No, but it doesn't. So the book – well, first off, the reason why I read the book was a combination of the sweet, sweet Phil Noto cover with clapping Lando. and it's Greg Rucka writing it and Marco Cicchetto, and they were that team that worked on Punisher. So that was like, oh, cool. I want to see what they did. And Connor, it takes place during the battle in Jedi and then the next day.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, well, it's you know, clearly, you know, it's them rewriting the expanded universe and fine, you know, like whatever. And I got about halfway through it. All I could think of was just going, oh, no.
Why? Uh-oh. What happened?
I don't want this. I don't want to know this. No.
See, there you go. That's why I didn't read it.
I'm just like, no. That's all.
Actually, you know what? The full title is actually Star Wars, Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire. According to Comixology.
Oh, there you go. So you got two Star Warses in there.
But, for the price of one. This title is better and better.
So get introduced.
That's a lot of colons.
Get introduced to a couple where the woman is a pilot in the fighter squadron. She's an A-wing pilot, and her husband is one of the troopers that was in Han. It was in the Endor force, and so you see the battle from their point of view. And then there's a little bit of the party, and then the next day turns out there's an encampment of Imperials on the other side of the moon, and Han and Chewie are pulling together a group to go root them out. And I was just like, yeah, this doesn't need to happen. Right?
It looked great. It was a very, very good looking book. I really liked this issue through and through, and I liked the supposed connection to The Force Awakens. And to me, it's just one of those things where
did I miss the supposed connection? What is the connection?
Whoa!
Connor, can you put your headphones down?
I'm putting my headphones down.
All right. Well, yeah. So the Dameron guy and the lady are supposed, you know, the idea that everyone else is taken from it is that they are Poe Dameron's parents.
I don't know who Poe Dameron is. Who's that?
Oscar Isaac.
Ah, stop! I don't want to know this stuff. All right, I'll tell Connor to come back.
See, now I heard you scream. That's why I didn't want to read this. Now
I don't want to know this. But it didn't say that in the book. That's all assumption.
Well, it's because you didn't know the character's last name because you're not paying attention close enough.
No, I'm not. I'll pay attention on December 18th when I see the goddamn movie.
Well, it was right there in front of you.
All right.
Let me make an amendment while you guys were discussing that. I did some more digging. It's actually just Journey to Star Wars, : The Force Awakens, - Shattered Empire, #1. There's no double Star Wars in the title.
Oh, that's unfortunate. All right.
That's unfortunate because before we were looking at 68 characters in the title. And I think that might have been the new record. But
Also, mark this timestamp so when you edit it, you don't hear what we just talked about.
I'm just going to skip it.
Yeah, just skip it. But I don't know. The thing is that I thought this is interesting because it takes place after Jedi, and I didn't realize it literally took place 30 minutes after Jedi.
Moments. Now, is this something I should download and read after the movie comes out?
I mean, I'm sure it'll be collected by that point. Oh, I guess not. Yeah. Maybe the first three or four issues, I guess, will be out.
I really didn't. I mean, aside from what Jim just told us, which I didn't realize while reading it, there's nothing that gives away.
To take that away, is it a good story? Is it a good issue? Yeah. Is it fun?
Yes, but if you ask me, if you told me this was a Dark Horse, you know, expanded universe story, I would believe it. Like it didn't feel as special as Jason Aaron's Star Wars book to me.
But you know what? But I feel like there were enough of the main characters involved that it did, because that's my biggest criticism of some of the Star Wars books, and I guess we'll talk about it when we talk about Darth Vader, is that I like it when I can make sort of clear connections and see the things that I know in the story, and I know that's probably bad for storytelling or whatever, but from a commercial standpoint, I think it's a brilliant idea.
No, but that's the thing, and maybe we should just move Darth Vader up and talk about it now. All right, but makes sense. Yeah. But the thing is that, like, I find with these stories that the less the core characters that I know and love are in it, the less I'm interested in it.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah. But I felt like there was enough in Shattered Empire to get me. Like, I like that, you know, the pilot is part of Han's team. And I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just like you like. Did you like Vader, Darth Vader #9, or not?
I'm starting to lose my faith in the book a little bit. Not because, it's just I like when Darth Vader is a force of nature, and I think that the Vader in this series is a little too chatty.
The more, yes, that was my problem with the issues I read. And the more you know about these characters, the less interesting they become. It's like,
but, yeah, no, and I started out really loving Vader. I mean, Jim, I think you and I talked about it just off, like, personally, that Vader, Vader was the
standout book,
the standout, the secret, you know, the sleeper hit of the Star Wars books. And now that we're 9 issues in, it's kind of getting, and I don't know if this is a Kieran thing or whatever, but it's getting a little long in the tooth. You know, the story that they've got going, I'm like, all right, let's kind of wrap this up. You know, although I will admit that there was an enormous high point in the issue, and Connor, almost to the point where I would tell you to go to the comic store and check this out just to see it. But at one point, Vader is on a planet and he's video conferencing with an Imperial officer, and you see it from the Imperial officer's point of view, and it's the weird little hologram, you know, like the little hologram view. And then they cut to the planet, and Vader is sitting on top of his TIE fighter, like Indian style, but like with one leg hanging down, holding this little orb of the thing. And it's just like, hey, it's casual Vader. I'm sitting on the hood of my car.
No.
It was like, yeah,
exactly. No. These are things I do not want.
Just hanging out here, admiring the scenery.
So much wrong with it, it's not even funny.
Did he have a Letterman jacket on?
Well, then, and I'm also starting to, like, the anti-3PO and R2 are... Like, I thought they were great at first, but now I'm like, all right, I get it. They're murder bots.
The story's got to move a little faster, that's all.
Yeah.
But are you okay with a casual Vader?
I thought casual Vader made me laugh, so I'm fine with it. I mean, it's wrong. I said no, but it was just funny enough to make me laugh.
Was he waiting for Molly Ringwald to come out of the church then? Yeah,
might have been. Yes, he was very Judd Nelson-esque, actually. So, hey, if you like this show, if you like this podcast, if you like iFanboy in general, there are several ways you can show your support, and we love and thank everybody who's done that thus far. Go to iFanboy.com/support, and the easiest and honestly best way that you can support us is by clicking on the link to go shop at Amazon. If you click on the Amazon.com link from iFanboy.com/support, you get to buy cool stuff from Amazon, which we know you're doing anyway, and then we get a little cut of it. No money comes out of your pocket. It all comes out of Jeff Bezos' pocket. So click on that Amazon link, and then any purchases you make, we get a little bit of, so we thank you for that. If you want to support us more directly, you can click on our membership program, where for $3 a month or $30 a year, you could say, hey, I really support iFanboy. I like this podcast. I want to help them out. And we thank everybody who has done that. And if you don't want to have a monthly or yearly, donations, going, you can just donate one time through PayPal, just any amount that you like.
If you're Jeff Bezos and need to have your pockets lightened a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can enlist any amount. If you want to set $100, you can do that. So just click on the donate via PayPal button. And we thank everyone for their support. Without you, we wouldn't be here for over 500 episodes. There you go. iFanboy.com/support.
There's your script there. A giant size little Marvel number 4, not number 9.
Yes.
Yep.
I realized as I was putting the script together that I had read issue 1 of this and never went back.
Yeah. So am I the only one who read this?
Yep.
Yes.
All right. This book has been a ton of fun. So here I have got a little bit of admission.
I want to read it. I'm going to go back and read it, I think. Yeah. But anyway, go on. So.
My first comic had the X-Babies in it. And so when it comes to...
That's how young you are. Your comic had the goddamn X-Babies. Wait, was it the Arthur Adams X-Babies, or was it Jacob Chabot?
No, it was Arthur Adams' X-Babies.
Okay, at least that. Whew, all right, yeah. Then. Okay.
So ever since then, I have a place in my heart for childlike versions of Marvel Heroes.
Listen, you go back to Muppet Babies. That's a seminal cartoon in Ron and I's generation.
Yep.
I like that. I mean, I always enjoy infantilization versions of the character.
Right, it's getting weird now, guys.
So this is Scotty Young through and through with Jean-Francois Bellieu on colors, and it's been the story is up until this point has been there. These two, a boy and a girl, have moved into Marville, and it's where the Avengers and X-Men babies, or they're not babies, they're young. That's actually a joke that they make in this issue. It's actually pretty funny. But anyway, they have tree houses, and they're trying to recruit these two kids to their teams. And so at the end of every issue, a new team essentially comes into play. And so, so the Guardians of the Galaxy came in, and they're all, a bunch of jokes and whatever, and trying to win these people over. And then in this issue, it feels like Scotty is literally poking fun sort of at himself and sort of at the general mass hysteria about really on a bunch of Marvel things, including the frenzy behind you know, the young variants of these characters. And so the Inhumans come in, and you know, there's a joke about them, and then the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants come in, there's a joke about them. I mean, it is just, it is fun. It feels like, you know, feels like Looney Tunes, and it really is just a great time.
So I remember enjoying issue one, and I think just because I've got my Battleworld blinders on, I just forgot. So
because there's 90 Secret Wars tie-ins.
Yeah, because I am currently downloading all the 4 issues of this book.
Yeah.
Jim, you might know the answer to this question. When does Battleworld end? Does it ever end? Are we in this forever? Is it just the new? Is it just the reality we have to live with?
It's the reality we have to live
with. I'd like to get back to reading some Marvel books.
Yeah, no, theoretically, when we reach the end of Secret Wars, where they've now tacked on another issue too, so, you know, maybe sometime in 2016, you know, hopefully we'll get a unified Marvel Universe in some portion of it. I mean, it feels like they're just going to pick and choose what they like, and that's what we're going to get, and that's what's going to stay.
So the last issue of Secret Wars is December now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so, okay, so next year. It's a long time. A long time.
Yeah.
Yikes.
And but the thing is that we're starting to see stuff get solicited. Like, we saw, like, Jason Aaron's Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
We're going to run into the point where books are going to start coming out from the new, all new, all different, or whatever it's called now, Marvel Universe, that will either spoil parts of Secret Wars or what. But they're going full steam ahead, regardless of whether or not the event is over or not. So.
And then in the classic Marvel way. There you go.
That's right.
Oh, God. All right. Well, I took a flyer and read Harley Quinn's Road Trip Special number one, because I know Harley Quinn's very popular. And I was like, oh, I'll check it out. You know, Amanda Conner doesn't draw this.
Yes, I do know that.
Okay.
If you had asked me, I would have told you that.
Oh, all right. Yeah, then I promptly put it back down.
She's going to be drawing the new one they just announced, the second Harley Quinn book that's going to be bi-monthly. She's going to be drawing that.
All right, yeah. Well,
with other special guest artists. I assume Darwin Cook will be there at some point.
Yeah. Well, that was fun. I mean, it's wacky and it's fun and that sort of thing, but I was really disappointed that she doesn't draw it.
She does the covers. I didn't read this, even though I read the regular book, because I feel like I'm at Harley Quinn saturation point. And I realize it's only one series. And I'm going to read the second one because of the Amanda Conner art. But, like, Harley Quinn's the kind of character we talk about a lot that's really, really great in small doses.
Yeah.
I'll just wait till Suicide Squad comes out, because you're going to see a lot more of her.
Yeah, so I feel like every month, and the book is so over the top that it was really fun and refreshing at first, but now it's just kind of like, I don't know if I can continue reading these adventures every month. These are all good books. And there's a reason why they're popular, but I just feel like, you know, I don't necessarily want to read The Punisher every month. I don't want to read, like, we're not talking about it, but All-Star Section 8. We talked about it last time, how maybe these aren't characters you want to follow as main characters. You know, some characters are just supporting characters, and that's okay. It's okay to be a supporting character and not a main character. But so that's why I didn't read this one. Sorry.
All right. No problem.
I did read Ms. Marvel 18, though, which one of the few Marvel books I am reading through the Battle World Secret Wars thing. And what I really liked about this issue was this issue wrapped up the team-up between Ms. Marvel and Captain Marvel, in which... Captain Marvel has to sort of break the news to Ms. Marvel that the world is sort of ending. And it sucks for her, but that's just what's happening. I liked the examination of a young hero in way over her head in this particular scene. Well, she's so focused on saving her town. It's Hoboken, right? Or is it Jersey City? I think it's Jersey City.
It's all the same.
They're both the same to me.
Oh, the other side of the river.
Yeah,
she's so focused on that, she doesn't realize that the world is ending. The world is ending around her, and I like that examination. And I'll be very interested to see what survives into the all-new world, because I guess next issue is... It says to be concluded next issue, which seems like there's a lot of leeway between next issue and the end of the year, but...
Well, she's on the new Avengers team, isn't she?
I know, she's surviving, clearly. She's a really popular character, but, like, how much of the story is surviving? Because in this issue, her mom reveals that she knows that Ms. Marvel is Ms. Marvel, so... Or Kamala is Ms. Marvel. But this is such a beautiful looking book. I think this is just one of the breath of fresh airs in comics right now that I'm really enjoying. And they continue to find really fun ways to sort of reinvent the young superhero genre and also make her really, really appealing, right up to the cover, which I think is a really great representation of the characters with thought balloons. So Ms. Marvel 18 was really great.
All right, cool.
Did you read the S.H.I.E.L.D. 50th anniversary Quake issue?
No.
The one I did.
Yeah, I thought that this jumped out at me because it was written by We Can Never Go Home's Matt Rosenberg and Patrick Kinlan. And who's the artist on it? I forget. I don't have it in front of me. But the an artist I'd never heard of.
I'm blanking on his name too.
Yeah, but very Chaykin-esque art.
Daniel Warren Johnson, I think.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah. But very Chaykin-esque art at times. I was like, oh, I like this. But yeah, it was good. It was fun. I mean, it was. The you know, kind of shoving down our throats the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Sky character revelation that she's Daisy Johnson from Secret Warriors. You know, like that is clearly what they're doing. But it was done in a nice little kind of classic Avengers tale. And for those eagle-eyed readers, might notice that all the names of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents were members of the Gorilla Biscuits.
Yeah, nice this was actually a lot of fun. I only have two nitpicky things about it, and one is positive, one I don't get. One, I loved that the time period in which the story took place, because I really liked that Avengers lineup when Bendis was writing it, mainly because I really like Red Hulk.
Was that your first comic?
Yep. But in this, you get introduced to who inevitably we find out in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is Sky / Quake / Daisy's mother, and she's, you know, happy-go-lucky, but in the show, she's crazy pants.
Right, yeah. So, yeah. You
know. There's only so much you can do.
Whatever. I know.
Only so much.
So those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Go to iFanboy.com, and you can find the post for this show, and you can comment on these books or other books, whatever you read in comics or whatever's on your mind in comics this week is over at iFanboy.com. So last week we did the big 501st episode with lots of your emails. So many of them we didn't get to go to, so we're going to have a lot of emails to catch up on this show, so we're going to add some to the normal rundown. But before we get to these emails, Ron, should we make Jim explain his dumbass pudding email?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a reckoning that's needed to be here. I was very disappointed.
Look, some of these things are not to be read out loud. I put that in there for you to chuckle. But I also knew that at the time I emailed it, it would probably show up late in the show and you guys would be wasted. And
you had no way to know it would be Josh who was wasted.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So sure enough, you know, I sent it in and look, you guys answered it anyway. So who's the sucker now?
That's a good point.
That's what we do, though. People send us emails and we answer them. That's our job.
We're an email answering machine. That's all.
All right, well, let's get to Adam M. from Indiana writes and says, at the moment, it seems Star Wars The Force Awakens is avoiding the Age of Ultron-style teaser and trailer blitz that many of us found to be a bit too much. The promos we've seen so far of The Force Awakens give very little insight into the plot. At present, it seems like the filmmakers seem intent on not spoiling it before it's released. I was wondering how each of you is planning your personal journey to The Force Awakens. Have you implemented any sort of self-imposed Star Wars media blackout? Are you planning to consume the various books, comics, or the promotional material? Also, did any of you buy anything on Force Friday?
Let's answer that question first.
Last question first?
Fuck no.
No Sphero BB-8 for you?
I locked myself in my apartment and didn't come out all day Friday because it's just it doesn't mean anything. I'm still – here's my problem. I'm still stinging. Listen, I waited in line at Toys R Us on Jericho Turnpike in May of 1999, and I bought three of every one of those goddamn Episode 1 figures. Right? I was so excited for Rick Oley and Captain Tanaka and where did that – get me. Got me nowhere. So I wasn't gonna be fooled again this time.
I didn't buy anything, but I had BB-8 bought for me.
Oh, that's
so
really nice.
I still can say I did not buy anything on.
I find
for
it really fascinating that everybody's falling in love with BB-8, and when they finally see the movie and find out he's a horrible racist droid.
I made that joke already on Twitter, Ron. You gotta. Yes, I mean it's an adorable and awesome toy that also is the first step to our eventual demise at the hands of the robots. Yeah. I mean, it really is clear.
The winner on Force Friday was Sphero. Talk about a company you never heard of before last week, and then now they're everywhere.
Cow. Yep.
So, Jim, did you buy anything on Force Friday?
I bought one thing. I wanted to get a Black Series, you know, Kylo Ren.
No names.
Oh, all right. Well, I ended up with something else.
You went for one thing and didn't get it. You got something else.
Yep.
This is a good indication for Adam M. about how seriously Ron and I are taking
here we go
our Star Wars The Force Awakens media blackout. I don't even want to know character names. don't want to know anything.
I'm right there with you. As you could, as evidenced earlier when you stepped away, Connor, I didn't know who was talking about.
I haven't even seen the second teaser. They put that little teaser. I didn't even see that. I didn't even watch it.
Yeah, no, they did something on Instagram. I avoided that like the plague. Yeah. I've only seen the two trailers that I've seen in movie theaters. That has been my only allowance. I avoided all the Vanity Fair article, the Entertainment Weekly article. Like, I've avoided it all. And to be honest with you, I'm actually pretty fucking pissed because Marvel announced that C-3PO one shot that James Robinson's writing, and like that gave away a huge thing that I'm actually that's the one thing that now I feel has been spoiled for me, and I'm pissed.
It's almost getting impossible to avoid these things. Yeah. It's going to get worse as the time goes on. I handed somebody the Entertainment Weekly article and a paperclip, and I said, please clip together the Star Wars pages, so I won't see them.
Now, you're probably drowning in stills, right?
Oh yeah, drowning in stills.
Drowning
lots
in photos,
lots of galleries.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
movie stills.
But look, things you didn't notice in the trailer. 8 moments in the trailer that made us blow our mind. It takes place in Star Wars. Sorry.
Whatever. Look, people love that stuff. Anyway.
But so I assume you're wide open.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But I think it's unfair to assume that Star Wars is not going to go the Age of Ultron route, because it's still a little bit early for that. I bet by middle of next month, that Disney machine is going to be churning out 42 clips.
I don't think they are.
No, listen. I'm with Jim. Like, it is now it's the middle of September. We have a long way to go till December.
99
I agree,
days.
But I think that JJ has they had to give him certain concessions to do this film, and he has a long track record of not releasing any information about his movies.
Is he more powerful than Kevin Feige?
Yes, because they wanted him to direct the movie, and in order to get him to do that, he probably said, "You cannot." That's what he does. He doesn't like. He wants people to see the movie.
But there were a lot of clips for Star Trek. But
there were, yeah. So, but that was, I feel like that was a bigger hill to climb.
Yeah, Star Trek. He didn't have like Cloverfield didn't have any information on it whatsoever. I mean, this is.
But that was purely JJ though. This,
right, but I mean that's his MO. He said that's what he wants. He doesn't want people to. He thinks people know too much about movies before they go to them. So, I can see your point that Disney will turn the machine on in the next couple of months. But I can also see the point of, in order to get me to direct this movie that you really want me to direct, I need you to not do that.
They're just gonna give us 3 second clips on Instagram from now to eternity.
It's gonna be hard though, Ron. We're gonna have to go into some sort of
bunker. I've been building a bunker in my backyard. Actually, I'm planning on at the end of this month I'll be descending and I'll be locking myself and coming out on December 18th. And yeah,
like Star Wars Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
So Jim, are you you obviously have to be deep into it because you run comicbook.com and you need to post all this stuff that comes out, but would you be as into it if you didn't have that?
I like finding out about this.
You're
stuff.
A young person. You like to know everything before it happens.
I am. I do like to know everything before it happens.
You need to post the GIFs on Tumblr, right?
Right, exactly. You know. How else am I going to drive those clicks? But no, I mean, I like finding out about that stuff. I mean, there are. I thought it was a little bit overboard for Age of Ultron, that by the time I saw it, I think there was a bit of magic lost. But that could have also been because, I mean, it wasn't that great of a movie, but there will be, I think, a tipping point, even for me, who doesn't mind getting information ahead of time, like character names, you know, I don't, or if I know who a character is, great. Like, I'm not going to take it that extreme, Ron, but.
How old were you in 1999?
1999? Yeah. I was 12.
All right, hold on a second. I got to process that for a minute. All right. I mean, the reason why Ron and I are being so overreactive is because we had our hearts ripped out of our chests in 1999. And what Ron said is true. We went to those stores at midnight. I remember driving home from college to go see the movie and stopping along the way to buy more stuff.
When episode one came out, so what you had was I had a scenario with the original trilogy where I didn't know character names. Like, the first time I saw Empire Strikes Back was the first time I saw Lando Calrissian. Like, it was all, you know, it was laid out in front of me, you know, in a magical kind of way. I had no idea. You know, I saw Jedi in the theater. I didn't even know about Ewoks until they were on the screen. You know, like, it was that kind of like this pure magical discovery. And then the prequels came out, and I was on top of everything. I was on Ain't It Cool News every day, hitting reload, you know, and speculating who is this? What these battle droids? What are they? And like all this sort of all this bullshit, right? And then we bought all the toys, and we knew character names going into it, and then it didn't line up. Like it just there was a disconnect. It was, you know, Rick Olie was in it for 3 minutes. You know, like it was just
that's
it was just
2 minutes too many, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was just bullshit. It was just total bullshit. So I want to go back to 1983, not knowing anything about Jedi. That's why I want to be amazed. I want to be like, who? I want to fall in love with new characters, and I don't want to know about them because, you know, Annie Leibovitz took their photo in Vanity Fair. You know, like that's not. I don't know. I mean, but it's safe to say that this movie is going to be a. I mean, they're saying this might be the first $2 billion, you know, grossing movie.
Well, let's also calm that down. I think that's part of the problem of the hype is if it doesn't gross $2 billion, it'll be considered a failure. Kind of like people consider Ultron a failure even though it grossed $1.3 billion. So
Not if I'm really fascinating though. I was listening to the Star Wars Minute guys did a kind of a hiatus episode, and they brought up a good point that the Return of the Jedi came out in 83, Episode 1 came out in 99. How long is that? That's 16 years or yeah, about 16 years.
Yep.
And then the last prequel was 05, and here we are in 2015, so 10 years.
Right.
So but doesn't it feel like more time has passed since the last prequel?
Yes.
Yeah, just I find that fascinating. I don't know. I think the hype is justified. Whether or not it does $2 billion or not, I don't know. But I think it's going to be enormous. I think we're going to be living in a Star Wars world for the next 10 years.
Yeah. But even still, I mean, even with the information that they have put out, there's still a lot of mystery surrounding certain characters and things like that that I still, you know, and if that's JJ's control, then great. I like, you know, not knowing as much about certain characters, but you know, if it inevitably comes out, it's not. I don't think it's going to ruin it for me. I think it's my interest is still there to see how it all comes together on screen, as opposed to, you know, the pieces that make up the puzzel.
But again, like, so I went into the Lions Den, you know, like I went to D23.
That's true.
And Connor was like, really, you're going to go do that? I'm like, well, I'm ready to close my eyes or whatever. And I'll give them credit that I went in and walked out. And with very little about the movie that hasn't – like they had the costume. They had a BB-8 and they had costumes of characters, but stuff that I've already seen. So it wasn't – you know, it was stuff from the trailers and things like that. Really the only thing was that fucking poster with the character holding a lightsaber, which I was like, God damn it. But, you know, like that's the kind of thing I don't want to know, you know.
That's probably a really cool moment in the movie
that now
you're waiting for.
Yeah, so exactly.
Let's do Greg M. from Medford, New Jersey. Last week, so the wrap-up... I'm sorry, by the way, sorry for the jokes, Greg, about New Jersey earlier. Last week...
Sorry, not sorry.
Saw the wrap-up of Wade and Samnee's Daredevil run. I was wondering what you thought of the final issue. I know you guys weren't huge fans of Daredevil in San Francisco, but I felt they really stuck the landing, especially Chris Samnee. Thoughts?
Yeah, well, Chris Samnee sticks the landing every time. Like that. Like, I think the problems with Daredevil recently haven't been because of Samnee. It's because of that story has slogged on.
I loved... their first volume, the more I think about it, the more I just did not like it, the second volume at all.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately is going to taint it a little in my mind, their whole run, just because...
Yeah. I feel like it just went on a little too long. I feel like they should have stopped earlier.
I just don't think they should have moved to San Francisco.
Yeah, I was fine with the San Francisco issues.
Well,
I was
of course,
not fine.
You love San Francisco.
I was not, yeah, but I was not fine with the Shroud character, and it just felt like it felt like it was on repeat. It was on recycle and repeat a lot. The last couple issues with the Kingpin were strong. I thought they were really good. I thought the last issue was good, but yeah. But ultimately, I think it should have ended a year ago.
I mean, I think they knew the deadline that they were coming to, and so they had to spin their wheels a little bit to make it to that point. But I think overall, as a run, it's still one of the best damn Daredevil runs you know, in recent history. So. Yeah, you know, to that end, I think you can't take away the big wins that they had, but you know it could have ended a little bit stronger than I think it did. But I don't, you know, whatever.
It's just comics.
It's just comics.
But yeah, congratulations to them. And so the kind of the question I have for you is that so Charles Soule and Ron Garney on the new series, are you going to stick with it or
with a Shadowland-esque costume?
Yeah, I don't know about Shadowland-esque or TV show-esque.
Yeah.
I'll check the first issue out, probably. I like Charles Soule. I love Ron Garney. I love Daredevil. So I mean, I'm going to check out a lot of these all-new whatever Marvel books. What is it? What are they calling it?
All-new, all-different.
All-new, all-different Marvel. I'm going to try a lot of them.
See? Marvel still cares about the X-Men.
All right, our last email comes from Jason.
By the way, have you noticed that they're all letter M?
I have noticed that. All last names. Adam M, Greg M, and Jason M. Did you do that on purpose? Or?
Yeah, well, I didn't start that way, but I finished that way.
All right. So Jason M. writes in. We don't know where he's from. Hopefully not New Jersey. Jason M. writes in and says, whenever you talk sales numbers, you say that, quote, no one knows the digital sales numbers. Why is that? It's digital. There's no way Comixology doesn't know exactly how many of an issue sold at any given point. this should be true of all companies, but I wager a vast majority of sales come from them. At worst, they should know next day while they wait for reports to queue. I've heard that digital sales
Ron, stop. Be nice.
All right. I've heard that digital sales are so small that it doesn't matter, but every friend I have that does comics is digital only, and wouldn't any numbers, even if small, make a sales look better? I get why retailer numbers are guesses, but why isn't digital the true standard of success, since the numbers will be accurate to the issue? It is instant and, in theory, is a sample that would represent the whole fairly well. So to answer your question, yes, Comixology knows how many issues are sold, and they share that with the companies. The companies know how many are sold. What we say is nobody knows the true digital sales numbers because the companies do not want to share it. They don't want it public.
When we say that, we mean the readership, the media, the people who talk about the sales. No one knows what the sales numbers are. No one knows what the print numbers are either. We say that all the time, but we don't mean like no one knows. Like we're just selling comics and hopefully they're making money. Like the people selling comics know how many they're selling.
As random chat comes in the mail and being like,
oh, I did pretty well.
As both Jim and I can attest as being former publisher hacks, the numbers we see from Diamond are not accurate, are not real. And the digital numbers are not. Now, Jim, why aren't the digital numbers shared publicly?
It's comics' dirty little secret. So,
yep.
And I think it will forever be because it's probably not that great.
Yeah, no, that's the thing is that that nobody wants to step forward and show what their number is for two reasons. One, because then the first reaction is, oh, that's it. Mm-hmm. And the second reaction will be all the other publishers going, okay, okay, they sold X amount of that book, so then we can extrapolate the rest of their line and compare that to how we're doing, and that's an indicator of who's doing better or worse, and everybody wants to give an air of success, and so nobody actually wants to fess up and show what the numbers are.
If publishers had their way, Diamond would not put out sales numbers.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's comics is weird in that way where, you know, everyone else, like, there is a system to measure things like box office sales, TV ratings, etc. There is not something like that for comics.
For records. Right. Yeah,
exactly. There's nothing like that for comics, and it just goes to show how sometimes the comics industry is a little backwards.
Broken. There's the sad but true answer to your question there, Jason. But you might think that digital sales are a good, you know, Nielsen's rating sample size of what the sales are, but they're not either. You know, like I mean, they're not any indicator. You know, while I was at Image, there were books that sold nothing in digital and sold great in print, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Sad but true. Sad but true stories from the comic industry, starring Jim Viscardi and Ron Richards. That should be our new podcast.
That's it.
That would be a really popular podcast, by the way.
It would, yeah.
From the trenches.
Email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOY 326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and you don't have to have a last name starting with M to write us in. Anyone.
Or be from New Jersey.
Yeah, New Jersey people are also allowed to write us in. Yeah. We accept all emails from all people. Keep it around 30 seconds, and if you call our voicemail line. Some quick plugs. As we mentioned, episode 501 was last week. We recorded the video of it. If you haven't seen that, it's up on our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. It's also on our website in the post for the show, for the post about the video anyway. So if you haven't watched that video and you want to see Josh get so drunk he almost falls out of his chair at one point, that's where you do it.
Good times.
Which I think was a shocker and surprise to all of us involved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I think there's a point where Ron and I are like, is this happening?
we're going to look back on the 501 and say this is the beginning of the end.
So you can check that out over at ifanboy.com over at YouTube.
Yes. And you can also over at ifanboy.com check out Josh dusted off the mic and did a talk explode. He connected with our good friend Mark Miller and chatted about Mark Miller's books and his recent creator-owned success. And I listened to it. I thought it was a return to form. I told Josh he should do more of those. If you would like to hear more Talksplodes, if you enjoyed the Mark Miller Talksplode and you want to hear more, post on ifanboy.com or write us on Twitter and let us know if you want to hear more of this. But check it out. It was a fun time. And then, Jim, what are you up to over there in your little fiefdom?
Oh, you know, if you guys like to catch up, if you want to know what's going on, every little bit of minutia detail on movies and TV and comics, then comicbook.com is obviously the place that you should be going to. We've got a ton of great stuff, and we'll make sure to keep you updated on anything and everything that you like, literally.
Listen, if you want to see the 17 details about Diggle's new costume on Arrow in a gallery, go to comicbook.com and start clicking.
Just get there. Just start clicking randomly on everything you can.
Yeah. Yeah, eight Easter eggs in the Legends of Tomorrow teaser photo.
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of things in there. Look, these are connections to comics. We are keeping that alive. We're keeping comics alive.
Yep. All right. Fair enough. Someone's got to do it.
That's right.
Head over to iFanboy.com, where we no longer keep comics alive, and you can comment on this show, talk about this week's books. You can find all of our other podcasts, like the Talksplode that Ron just mentioned. That's all over at iFanboy.com. You can follow us at facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at Jim Viscardi, at CS Kilpatrick, and at Ron XO.
And if you enjoy this, if you enjoy iFanboy, if you enjoy the wonderful world of podcasts, help spread the word. Tell your friends, tell the folks at your comic book shop, tell anybody who, you know, if they've just discovered podcasts through Mark Maron or Serial, be like, hey.
Well, they did invent the podcast, so.
Well, they invented it, yeah. But hey, there are some guys, there are some pioneers before them doing called iFanboy. You should check it out. Go to iTunes, write a review. That's always helpful. We appreciate everybody who does that. And thanks for helping spread the love of iFanboy. Jim, thanks for stepping in. Thanks for joining us. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
We survived an hour together talking comics. How about that?
I only spoiled one thing for you.
Yep. All right, so that's it for this week's show. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Jim.
And hey, how about that nutty Star Wars bar? Can you forget all the creatures in there? And hey, Darth Vader in that black and evil mask. Did he scare you as much as he scared me? Star Wars! Those near and far wars! My seventh winner up here! Star Wars!
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.